Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Judiciary Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, February 8th. Let the record reflect. The time is 1:17 p.m. Today we have present Representative Carpenter, Representative Gray, Representative Eastman, and myself, Chair Vance. I'd like to remind the committee members and those in the audience to please silence your cell phones. The staff assisting us today is Lori Rowland from House Records and Talia Ames with the LIO. Thank you so much for assisting us today. Today's agenda, we will have a presentation on the Civil Division of the Alaska Department of Law. I'd like to invite Deputy Attorney General for the Department of Law, Ms. Corey Mills. Thank you so much for coming. We welcome you, and I ask that you put your name on the record and begin your presentation. If you would mind just going through a few slides, taking a pause to see if any members have questions. We've found that that's the best way to garner the information and move right along. So please begin.
Hey, thank you, Chair Vance and members of the committee. For the record, Corey Mills, Deputy Attorney General for the Civil Division at the Department of Law. And I appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee. I have done this before for some of you, and some of you are new. So I'm happy to share information. I apologize if it's somewhat repetitive, but just want to make sure everyone has a good overview. So we're going to go a little old school. So if you want to follow along with the presentation, we were unable to get it to work today. So I'll kind of try to signal which slide I'm on. So moving to the second slide in the presentation, it says the Alaska Department of Law. And it basically provides what our main purposes are. We provide legal services to state government, and we prosecute crime. So when it comes to the Civil Division, if you move to the next slide, I think everyone knows prosecuting crime, that's the Criminal Division. So that's my counterpart, John Skidmore, on the criminal side. Move to slide number 4, provides legal services to state government. That's where you find the Civil Division work. So that's kind of the big picture, and I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this next slide, slide number 5, because I think there's often people, I get a lot of questions about, well, what kind of work do you do? You see headlines about certain cases, but I think not everyone understands kind of the breadth of what we do. So when we say we represent state government, This slide includes every department in state government. We have attorneys that represent every single department, board, commission, public corporation, lieutenant governor's office, elections, basically, you name it, we do it. And in order to do that, the only two that we don't represent, just to be clear, we don't represent the Alaska Railroad Corporation, which we sometimes get questions about. And that was just a statutory determination back when the railroad was created. And we don't represent the university. They have their own counsel. So another way to look at it is if you look at the statute books in your office, you take out Title 11 and Title 12 for the criminal, we have an attorney that likely touches every other single part of the statute. The only other area that we don't really cover is like domestic relationship type things before the courts, so think divorce, child custody. We deal with child protection, however, and child support, so we do cover those. So in addition, you know, so we're providing advice to all of the departments. And in addition to that, of course, where you see us more often is we're defending any actions when the state is sued. You have a slip and fall, for example, on state property, that comes to us. You have a DOT truck that cranes off the road and causes some sort of damage, that's us. You have wrongful death actions in corrections, which I know is a topic today. We have to represent the State and Department of Corrections in those lawsuits. So at any given time, if you look, we have a case management system, and similar to private firms, we actually do billable hours. And not quite as, you know, we're not quite as strict, I'd say, as private firms, but we do track everyone's hours. And that's in order to make sure we can do attorney's fees motions in cases, as well as just to make sure we know what's going on throughout the department, and to know what our workloads are. So I know I can look at my case management system today, and there are over 8,000 active matters that were worked on throughout the last year that somebody touched in some way.
Ms. Mills?
Yeah.
I can take a moment.
Yeah, definitely.
Record reflect at 1:20 p.m. we were joined by Representative Groh, Representative Johnson, Representative Vice Chair Allard, and we are on slide 5. We are having technical difficulties with getting the slides up on the screen, but you should have them in your packet. And we do have a question by Representative Carpenter.
Yeah. Thank you. Briefly, thank you, Ms. Mills, and through the chair, you talked about billable hours. Do you charge the agencies that you represent through interagency receipts those billable hours?
So Representative Carpenter, through the chair, it is a mix. And we'll talk about this more in budget subcommittee on Friday, which I believe you are all on as well. But yes, there are there's certain work where we charge the agencies for that work, and then there's certain work where we get the money. And I think there's just been a historic reasons. For example, if we're able to get federal money, we kind of have to get it through the agency. So we want to do billables to them so that we can take advantage of those federal funds. So those are the circumstances that kind of made billable hours a thing at the Department of Law. And then over time, it has expanded depending on the services we're providing and whether there's some benefit to doing it that way.
I'll keep the rest of the questions till budget subcommittee. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Please continue.
Yes, and I will be talking a lot about our budget on Friday. So I said 8,000 active matters at any given, like over the course of a year, there's usually about 8,000 matters that the civil division is handling. Some of them, I do want to be clear, some of those are years long. You know, we have litigation that lasts 4 years. Some of them are a 3-month temporary project where we're just doing legal research. So when I say 8,000 matters, that can vary. It can vary a lot by how much time has to be put into each of those matters. So when I looked last year, because we do billable hours, I'm able to look and see how much time did our attorneys spend on actual substantive matters, you know, taking out any administrative time. And it was over 255,000 hours last year. So we have 264 employees within the department. That's out of that 264, 148 of them, or the positions we have, are attorneys. So at any given time, you know, we're going to have a vacancy factor. So we don't usually have the total 148 working at any given time. Somewhere between, right now we're doing pretty good. So somewhere between 135 and 140. So if you take that, if you take the 8,000 matters and you take the 255,000 hours, what you get is each attorney is usually handling about 55 matters. And on average, they bill 1,800 hours a year. And if you look at private firms, 1,800 hours to 1,900 hour billable hours a year is usually their minimum requirement. So we're about on par in that regard with the private sector. Are there any questions before I go kind of into the more specifics about how we break down our department?
I just asked that as you move on slides, since we may not have page numbers, if you could just read the top line and help everyone know where we're at.
Yes, I'm happy to do that. I also noticed there are no.
Yeah, it appears there's no questions, so please continue.
Okay. So moving to the next slide, at the top of the slide, it says protecting Alaskan safety. These are kind of what we view as the core services that the civil division in particular provides. So we protect Alaskan safety and financial well-being, and I'll go more into detail about how we do this. Foster conditions for responsible development of our natural resources, protect the fiscal integrity of the state, and promote good governance. So moving to the next slide, where it says on the left-hand side, civil division structure. So this is an area I'm going to go into a little bit more on Friday, but over the last, I'd say, couple of years, we've kind of restructured. It hasn't changed what we do. It hasn't changed where our positions are allocated. But we just kind of created buckets, I'd say, to more clearly define the work we do. So we've broken it out into 5 different components: statehood, defense, and resource development, protective legal services, government services, torts and other civil defense litigation, and then legal support services. So now I'm going to kind of go into each of those and the sections we have that do that work. So on the next page, if you see at the bottom, it says statehood defense and resource development. So our four sections that manage this work are our natural resources section, our oil and gas section, transportation, and environmental. So most of these are kind of exactly what they sound like. Natural resources, those attorneys represent the Department of Natural Resources on everything except oil and gas work. So they do the mining permitting, they do any sort of land leasing, they do all the timber management, any sort of that kind of project development that's not oil and gas related. Our oil and gas section, I actually would like to rename this section if we get a chance, because they're really covering all of our tax work now. So they do the fisheries taxes as well. Basically, anything that the tax division at the Department of Revenue needs assistance with, that section is now covering. We used to have it broken out a little bit differently. But they also do the majority of our oil and gas related work. So one of their attorneys is full-time advising the Alaska AOGCC, which I can never remember exactly what it stands for, Gas Conservation Commission. So one attorney does that work, and then the remaining attorneys do that tax work as well as kind of the royalty and lease work at the Department of Natural Resources. So they're really, when you think about, you know, the revenue we're bringing in, they make sure that the money that is owed to the state comes to the state. So when you go to our transportation section, they do everything that the Department of Transportation could possibly want or need. So that's, they do a lot of contract work, because you think about construction contracts, permits, any sort of disputes going on. They deal with the Alaska Marine Highway System and advise on everything from operations to construction. To, you know, they handled the litigation when, this was years ago now, but when the Fast Ferry's engines didn't work, and we went to the manufacturer and said, you sold us a bill of goods, and we were able to settle that case and get damages and new engines. And then our environmental section, they do all the work for the Department of Environmental Conservation. That's water, waste discharge, contaminated sites, basically anything you could think of. They do enforcement actions for air, when people aren't taking care of the environment in compliance with our laws, we will bring actions to enforce that.
Ms. Mills, let's take a brief at ease to set up the presentation.
Oh, did we figure it out?
We now have the overhead presentation so that everyone can follow along, and we have a question from Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, I noticed that the Department of Law is proposing a restructure to the Civil Division, and I just kind of quickly glanced through the slides. Is that something that we'll talk about on Friday, or are you going to touch on that today?
Representative Gray, through the chair. Correct. It's really how we're representing our budget components is a little bit different, so I want to focus on that more on Friday, if that's okay.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Okay. But I do think this presentation will get you a sense of what our sections are, and the restructuring is really very aesthetic, I guess I'd say. It's kind of how we're grouping our sections together is just a little bit different. Okay, so I'm going to move on to the next. So the next kind of bucket component that I was talking about is protective legal services. I think the one that most people are most familiar with is child protection. I mean, that's clearly where we're out there. We're working with the Office of Children's Services. We're bringing the cases that need to be brought to protect those children, to terminate parental rights when necessary. I will tell you that child protection, I said there's 8,000 matters. 3,000 of those are child in need of aid proceedings that we do every year.
Before you dive into that,
yeah.
We may need to back up a little bit. We have a question by Vice Chair Allard.
Yeah, I apologize. It's good to see you. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Okay. So environmental, can we put back that slide? Can you give me, I received an email today. A constituent said we don't have a department that addresses that, and I beg to differ. So could you talk a little bit about environmental, just a tiny bit?
Yes, definitely. Representative Allard through the chair, or Vice Chair Allard, I should say. So the Department of Environmental Conservation, has responsibility mainly to regulate, to enforce our environmental laws. And we actually have very robust environmental protections in our state. It's one of the reasons it's Alaska's position that we do it better. And so we don't need the federal government interfering. I think you see that theme very often in the cases we file. So the Department of Environmental Conservation, they do a lot of water work, for example, what are called 402 permits, but water quality, ensuring that our waters and the water, not only drinking water, but, making sure we have water and the quality to sustain the habitats that we need to sustain, which is also a fish and game. They kind of work together on those things. Like I said, contaminated sites. So if you have any sort of contamination from an oil spill, but also another sort of hazardous substance that may arise, that's something else. I mean, we have, I don't know, 50 contaminated sites cases that we're working through. And those can be long-standing because contamination can be something that takes years to overcome. And then we have the cleanup of that as well, that the state sometimes has to be in charge of cleaning it up, and then we try to go to those responsible for the damages, but our goal is to make sure it's cleaned up in the first place. And then you've got air quality. We also deal with a lot of air quality issues, and we're very involved right now working I want to say with, but trying to work with the federal government on Fairbanks and their air quality issues and trying to make sure Fairbanks' economy and way of life is protected while also protecting the air quality. A few other interesting things is we have a state veterinarian, for example, and we do shellfish testing. And they deal with, like, the food when you go to a restaurant. You want to make sure that the food being served is healthy and that the environment there is healthy so that we don't get people sick when they go to restaurants. They do things like that. So it's really a broad range of things that just make sure we're living in a healthy environment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Wonderful. Did we touch on the human services before?
I have not yet. I was going to move to them next. I realized I should have put child protection first just because they're the ones everyone thinks of.
Okay.
But I am going to talk about human services as well. Where I left off, I was saying that out of that 8,000, the 8,000 legal matters, 3,000 of those are generally, it's about on average 3,000 are cases being brought by our child protection attorneys and being worked on every year. So if you think about that, that's 3,000 children plus, depending on if you have one or more children involved in any particular proceeding. So they do really, I view it as very important work for the state and for the department. Human services kind of covers everything else that we used to think of as the Department of Health and Social Services, but now is the two departments, Department of Health and the Department of Family and Community Services. So Office of Children's Services is just one office in Department of Family and Community Services. And so our human services section does everything else for them. And the reason we put them in protective legal services, kind of combined with child protection, is they do a lot of our work for vulnerable adults. They help do the mental commitment hearings if someone's a harm to themselves or to others. They advise the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, which I'm sure you can see is a full-time job. There's a lot of work and a lot of issues there to work through. And so that's kind of they combined do all of that kind of health-related work between those two sections. And so any questions on those two? Because I think those two are related before I move to more of our licensing.
I think we're probably going to be doing a deeper dive with you into those areas later, but this is a good overview.
Okay. So commercial and fair business, this does our professional licensing work, and you might wonder why this is protective legal services, but it's because our work there is to ensure that the people who are licensed are properly licensed, and that if there are any revocations or if there are any actions occurring in violation of a person's license, then we take those actions to help enforce. And that just keeps a level of safety among the different occupational licensing boards. They also do child support recovery actions to ensure that child support is getting to the people it needs to get to. And then the other work they do is a lot of our boards and commissions, so alcohol and marijuana sales. They advise those boards, and they also advise the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Moving to our regulatory affairs and public advocacy section, I call this the small but mighty section. People don't realize it, but this section saves millions of dollars in hikes in utility rates per year. They are charged with advocating for the public interest before the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. So I was saying our last section, we have an attorney who advises the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, and they are screened off from this section that then sits in hearings and helps advocate, file pleadings, argue before the Regulatory Commission of Alaska when they think the rates that utilities are coming forward with are not fair and not in line with statute. So I'm going to move on. Okay. Our next kind of group of sections, this is kind of our largest group, is government services. And this kind of covers a pretty wide gamut, but you think of it more as kind of the core of what government kind of has to do. Our opinions, appeals, and ethics section, this is headed up by our Solicitor General on the civil side that oversees all of our appellate proceedings and all of our appellate attorneys. So any matter, including our child in need of aid cases, that's their largest caseload as well. When those cases are appealed, this is the section that argues those before the Alaska Supreme Court. And they also handle all of our appeals in federal court, or any other matters that go before the Alaska Supreme Court. The other thing this section does that's rather unique is this is where our ethics attorney is housed. So on the executive branch side, we have the Executive Branch Ethics Act that every public official has to adhere to. And our ethics attorney in this section is who helps advise all of the designated ethics supervisors around the state, helps draft advisory ethics opinions, and kind of helps keep everyone in line and make sure everyone knows where the lines are there. Public corporations and government services, we found over time that there were, you know, we started seeing a proliferation of public corporations being created by statute, and we kind of had them housed in a lot of different sections. And so what we did about 4 or 5 years ago now is consolidate all of those into one section, because a lot of the public corporation work is very similar. It's very commercial transaction related. You think Alaska Gas Line Development Authority, Alaska Industrial Development Authority, and Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Those are kind of the major ones. So all of that work is done through this section, as well as advising the Department of Education and Early Development. And the link there is that's very funding related. A lot of their work is sending money out, bringing it in, so it's very financial in nature. So they do that work as well as our retirement system work, so retirement and benefits. A special litigation is kind of exactly what it sounds like. Why special? Well, a lot of our attorneys handle litigation, but this is a section that specializes in it. So our expert litigators are in this section, and when we have complex matters or very weighty constitutional challenges, we have attorneys in this section handle it, along with using subject matter expertise from whatever section they need. The other thing this section does is they enforce our antitrust laws and our consumer protection laws. So our consumer protection unit is housed in this section, and that's mainly because a lot of the big multi-state litigation, antitrust litigation, is very, like I said, complex, and so it's nice to have a mix of that litigation expertise together to help our consumers and advocate for them.
Ms. Mills?
Yeah.
We have a question by Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, which department, with the governor files a lawsuit, who does that?
So yeah, through the chair, Representative Gray, that is handled by the civil division. If the governor wants to bring a lawsuit, that's something he consults with the attorney general about. And then ultimately we determine what legal team, you know, is appropriate to handle that matter.
Yeah, so it would vary depending on the matter.
Correct.
And the same, one more quick one, if it's okay, Chair. If he is being sued, if the governor is being sued, is it work the same way? That is about like which department will represent the governor in a lawsuit?
Through the chair, Representative Gray, correct. So the attorney general by statute, AS 44-23-020, is charged with defending the state in all actions. And that includes state officials if they are acting within the scope of their employment. We have a process by which we determine whether that's happening. So the governor is the high profile one, but I'll tell you the corrections commissioner gets sued more than anybody else. And then correctional officers, public safety officers, those are probably the public officials we represent most in tort actions and 1983 civil rights actions. And so those are things that are handled. All of that is handled by our department. There are times when we feel like outside counsel is appropriate to handle a matter. That can either be because we don't have capacity or the resources, or it's because there may be some conflict that makes it difficult for our department to represent in that circumstance. We'll still manage the legal contract, you know, and make sure that we think what they're doing is appropriate and that they're billing appropriately, but we'll hand it off to them for the kind of litigation strategy, depending on the matter. But that's pretty rare. We try to keep it in-house.
Follow up?
One more quick one. Can you give an example of a 1983 civil rights?
Yeah. It can be a broad range, but it can be a violation if someone thinks their First Amendment rights were violated by a police officer in some action they took, or the Fourth Amendment. Those can become, there's a federal statute that creates a private right of action for someone to sue. And I will tell you, I defer to my tort section who does this all the time, but that is the, I think, general umbrella that you can think of it. If you think of like a constitutional right, 1983 is a way for them to sue to have those rights enforced.
Thank you.
I would like to recognize that the committee has been joined by Representative Sumner. Welcome. And we have a question by Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, through the chair. Public corporations and government services, do they also represent the permanent fund corporation? Thank you.
And through the chair, Representative Carpenter, we do a piece of it. The Alaska Permanent Fund is another interesting one. There's a memorandum of agreement between the attorney general and the corporation that was established, I want to say like 20 years ago, to have them have their own in-house transactional attorney. So they have an attorney that's actually housed the Alaska Permanent Fund, but still technically overseen by the attorney general. And then we also help them with, you know, Open Meetings Act and other issues that may come up that are a little more outside of the transactional arena.
Follow up?
Thank you.
Please proceed.
So the last section on this slide is labor and state affairs. They kind of cover, you know, most of the work for the governor in terms of advice on the governor's powers and duties and boards and commissions, the governor's appointment powers, lieutenant governor's office. So you think, you know, they oversee regulations, they oversee elections, and then the division of elections, of course, along with that. And then they do the departments of administration. So think the division of motor vehicles, personnel, procurement, all of that falls under this section. And then also the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, all the matters they handle, and then Department of Military and Veterans Affairs as well. So it's really our catch-all kind of core government. Lastly, in government services, we have a legislation and regulation section. So all of you have legislative legal services to go to have your bills drafted. This is the section that drafts the bills for the governor. This section also has Rebecca Palazzotto is the chief regulations attorney for the state. That is a statutory position that we have to have. And so that position does final reviews on all regulations that are adopted and ensures that they comply with the Constitution as well as are consistent with statutory authority. And that position can actually disapprove regulations if they do not meet that test. And so all of that work runs through this section, along with I have Parker Pedersen here, who is our civil division legislative liaison. He is in this section. And so all the help that you all need with legal advice and other things comes through this section, and then we make sure we reach out to the right subject matter expertise. Lastly is another kind of newer section that was established 2 years ago, our professional development and public service section. This is another topic we're probably going to talk about a little bit more on Friday, but for those of you who have been around, you know that we've had a lot of recruitment and retention issues. And so this section was one of our responses to try to improve that. I'll be happy to report on Friday about the positive trajectory I think we're on. But this section was created to oversee all of our internship programs, externship programs, and then we have a 2-year fellowship program. So we housed it all together, so we had a focus on it. And the hope is to create a pipeline from internship, externship, fellowship, into working for the department. And this section, so she oversees those fellows and helps ensure everybody has proper supervision. And Jessica also looks at different recruitment efforts. Where can we post? What job fairs can we go to? Things like that. She helps management with those sort of options and opportunities. And then she's also helping us create a monthly training opportunity. Right now, we're calling it Agency Attorney 101. We're kind of going back to the basics, trying to get everyone retrained since we have such a new workforce on what it means to be an agency attorney, what it means to work for the Department of Law, and what are kind of our duties and roles versus what are the roles of the departments in carrying out policy, and how does our legal work fit in with that. So that was a new section that I think has been very successful and helped us really focus on professional development and those recruitment efforts that have really improved the workforce that we have at the department right now.
And how long have you had this new new position?
Yeah, so I think she started, I think we established it about a year ago now. So it's only been... I think she officially took over actually last January. And so she's been overseeing, she had 4 fellows, oversaw our internship program last summer. But anyway, it's, I don't know how we lived without it, to be honest.
Well, I look forward to that discussion in light of the budget and the same issue that everyone is dealing with recruitment and retention. But this sounds... I was excited about it last year when you talked about it, but now that you have a face to that job, I think that's something that we're going to look forward to. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. Through the chair, would it be possible that a future meeting, maybe during the budget subcommittee, that we get a little bit more details, maybe a concept of what has occurred, if there are positives here that one area of the state government is doing that is successful, maybe we can duplicate it elsewhere. So I'm curious to know what it is you've been doing.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Carpenter, whether it's in this committee or budget subcommittee, I'm happy to go through that. I don't think this Friday we'll have quite enough time to really dig in, but we're really excited about what's going on. And just to give you a preview, we're down to 4 vacancies. We had 24 last year. So we are on a great trajectory, and that is in part due to HB 226, but we've also stopped the backdoor flow. So it's, I'm just feeling really good about where we're at.
So in light of that, not having as much time during the budget subcommittee, we will be extending an invitation to come and just talk about that, because we spent a lot of time last year talking about this issue, and I was excited to hear your ideas, and granted, it's still very fresh, but that was my thought as well, Representative Carpenter, is that if we see such positive results in one area, that perhaps we could start implementing it in the criminal division and in other divisions. So thank you for your leadership on that. And we will see what we can work out in our schedule.
Oh, that sounds great, Chair Vance. And I'd love to have Jessica come and join us, and she can give some of her insight as well.
Wonderful. I think no further questions. We can proceed.
So we only have one face here, but the other area, this kind of goes to the 1983 actions we were talking about before, torts and other civil defense litigation. The reality is the state gets sued a lot. We're a big target. We have deep pockets. It's just the nature of being a state and a state's attorney. So these sections really represent the state in those kind of not the governor type of actions, but more when you're dealing, like I said, with your slip and falls, with your inmate litigation, which we have a ton of. These are the two sections that handle that. Right now, Mark Cucci is head of both of those sections. We'd like to break them out because between those two sections, I think we have about 20 to 24 attorneys. The best practices that Division of Personnel has told us is really to be only supervising 10 to be truly effective. So we're working on how to break that out so that we have the right amount of supervision over the right number of attorneys. But so you have torts, like I said, those are your slip and falls, the 1983 actions, those sort of things. And then we have workers' compensation. So we have an attorney that helps advise workers' compensation. This is another one where you have a wall. But then, of course, the state also has a lot of employees who file workers' compensation claims. So we represent the Division of Risk Management in handling those workers' compensation claims. And then corrections is on here. Corrections is kind of handled dually by, I'd say, the criminal division does a lot of it from the criminal justice perspective. But ultimately, corrections is, again, another just area where inmates have a lot of time and file a lot of complaints. So we have a section that helps manage that, as well as advise corrections on their policies and things like that to try to avoid future litigation where we can.
We have a question by Vice Chair Allard.
Thank you. And through the chair, you might have to rein me in on this one. I'm not sure. I might be out of line. When it comes to the state courthouse, we don't have COVID mandates anymore. Am I in the right area with policy right now? Or is this coming up in a conversation that I can hold?
So through the chair, I'm just not. So that's a court system set policy.
Okay.
So, and I don't think it's statewide. I think they've kind of delegated that down to the different presiding judges.
Okay. So if it's a state courthouse, they can decide whether to impose certain mandates. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. And, that is Ms. Nancy Mead, who is speaking to us about the courts. And while we look at the justice system as a whole, they are distinctly separate. And the Department of Law is under the executive branch and is very, very robust in all of the issues that you deal with. But no, very valid. This is why I want to bring in the different divisions, so that we can have an understanding of the justice system as a whole before we start digging into policy. So no question is out of order. So
even if I can't answer it.
Please proceed.
Okay. So lastly, another really important area that often gets overlooked is our information and project support section. This is headed by Alan Birnbaum. I think if you work in state government, you will know Alan. Because he advises on all records retention issues, all Public Records Act issues. If you have a question on those areas, Alan is the guy to go to. Disclosure of information, what's confidential, what's not. And he advises every single agency, the governor's office, even all of us, all use Alan as a super resource. And don't worry, we are working on a succession plan that I think is really important in this area. Public records have just gotten, I shouldn't say out of control, but it feels that way at times. Just with the amount of email we have, Public Records Act was never created, never thought of to think about email or text messages or all of those things. And so it's really astronomical, the number of documents and records that are being created daily by the state. And so just figuring out how to manage that, and then how to produce it, and how to search for it. Those are all things that we've had to tackle over the last two decades that just weren't a thing before. I mean, I think the best example, and I think one that many in the state know, is the Sarah Palin situation, former Governor Palin. We ended up having to go through, I think, it cost $300,000 to go through 100,000 documents. By the time we were done, I think it took us 3 years. So fortunately, we haven't gotten one that big in a long time, but that's the type of thing that this section kind of handles and helps us work through. And then they also help internally. Like I said, we have a case management system. So they manage, they have people who are experts in that sort of database and managing of documents and records. And they help everyone in the department be trained on the case management system, as well as help us from a more of an IT process and database processing. They also help train us on discovery tools, so we have ways that we can review documents quickly and redact where we need to without having to do your old PDF viewer and redaction efforts. So that's our legal support services kind of section. Any questions on that?
Vice Chair Allard.
Thank you. I'm through the chair. So being on the Anchorage Assembly, I probably have had about 8,000-9,000 document requests from me alone. Do you do that with our sitting legislators? How does that work?
So through the chair, no. The legislature is under its own disclosure rules, and so we've never kind of dealt with that from a legislative angle. I think the city councils are a little bit different. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And don't see any further questions, so please proceed.
Okay. Well, I think we're getting to the end here. I just wanted to give some examples. I'm not going to run through these. And I kind of mentioned this before, but we do a lot of work to bring money back into the state, whether it's through collection efforts. So these are just some examples where we've either brought in damages associated with a sinking of a barge that was sinking, and it was called the Delta Chief, and we brought in damages of $1.4 million. We have a lot of our, if you're familiar with all the opioid cases, you know, the state got involved in the opioid cases. It's our department that helps ensure we get those settlement funds, and so we've now settled, I think, 7 of those cases, and it'll total about $85 million for the state if all of those are finalized. Of course, our royalty and tax work always is bringing in money. And I highlighted before our regulatory affairs and public advocacy section, our small but mighty section, $6.2 million in quantifiable consumer benefits. So those were utility rates that weren't imposed because of their work. And then environmental, you know, again, we bring enforcement actions, and when people aren't following the law, there are certain fines and fees. So we've brought in $1.8 million there. So these are just examples of areas where we kind of, those efforts where we're bringing back in money to make sure the general fund gets the money that it was owed.
Representative Groh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me. I did have a question about this line under public corporations and governmental services saved about $80 to $86 million annually in dismissal of U.S. Department of Education impact aid section. Could you elaborate on that, please?
Yes, happy to through the chair. 2 years ago, the federal government decided to change the way they were looking at our impact aid for education. For those who don't know, impact aid is additional federal money we get for education, and it's based on kind of this formula. Well, they started taking into account, for example, the pupil transportation that's put in. So that was going to potentially decrease the amount of federal money we got by the $80 to $86 million. We engaged with an outside counsel firm that had actually dealt with these issues and were able to approach the U.S. Department of Education and enter into a negotiation. It's not really a settlement, but they basically backed off. And so we now have a path forward where our money is no longer going to be jeopardized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay. I think that's the end of my presentation. That kind of gives you the broad overview of the civil division. I'm happy to take questions, or like I said, if there's other topics you want to hear about in the future, happy to hear those as well.
Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, this is a basic understanding of how it works. In Thompson versus Hebden, which was the case was, as I understand it, that people felt that by limiting campaign contributions, that their federal First Amendment right was being violated.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point, it appears to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that the instructions were for the Attorney General to stop fighting that case. I know for my constituents, they, who felt that unlimited out-of-state contributions to candidates could improperly influence those candidates, so that maybe some campaign limits would be valuable. So who decides that? I know you're housed with the executive branch. I mean, does the governor say, hey, we're not going to fight that? Or who decides that you're not going to fight something?
So through the chair, Representative Gray, so it's you have to look, first of all, at who we're representing in any given case. So the executive branch is very broad. And for example, in that case, we were representing the Alaska Public Offices Commission. That is a commission that is appointed by the governor, but has independent and adjudicatory authority. So we were representing the APOC in that proceeding. So the discussions about the litigation generally happened at that level. We consult with the, you know, agency. If it's an independent, quasi-independent commission like that, we will consult with them. Unlike, for example, a department who ultimately has a commissioner that's at will appointed by the governor, in my opinion, those ultimately go to the governor because the governor gets to set the direction for the state. That's why we elect him. But in that case, it was APOC. So that was a consultation with APOC, but ultimately under our statutes, the Attorney General has ultimate authority over litigation decisions. So that's kind of the where the buck stops. He can consult with whoever he thinks is appropriate, but that decision ultimately gets made by him. I can explain that case if it's helpful, because I do think I do understand the angst it created, but I will tell you that from a litigation strategy perspective, it made a lot of sense. So that case, we actually won, I think, on a portion of it at the district court level, went up to the Ninth Circuit. I think the Ninth Circuit agreed. They may have taken out one more piece because there were different limits that were being challenged, but ultimately it was that $500 limit on candidates that kind of became the crux of everything. So we won at circuit court. It went up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court very strongly messaged the $500 was not going to fly. So then the Ninth Circuit panel took that and basically reversed what they had done. When we evaluated that case, if we had pushed it, it would have gone all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And then we could have gotten binding precedent telling us you can't have any limits. So we thought it was better from a litigation strategy perspective and supporting potential flexibility for the legislature to make a policy decision that we leave that possibility open.
Follow up.
Thank you. So did you, was there like a strategy session where you decided that probably the 9 U.S. Supreme Court justices would rule that campaign contribution limits were unconstitutional and would therefore open it up to the entire United States to have unlimited campaign contributions? Or, I mean, was it really, I mean, on a more local level, well, you decided. It wasn't APOC that decided.
No, so the Attorney General decides, but I tell you that in any given case, I mean, before we make a decision like that, we have what's called an appeal evaluation process, and that's vetted through a lot of our very experienced appellate attorneys. You know, they discuss it. It's, you know, a recommendation is put up, but ultimately the Attorney General gets to decide, and they consult with the client. That's always part of that process.
One more. Sorry. Through the chair. If the Attorney General had decided we're going to go to the Supreme Court, it would go to the Supreme Court. If Correct. The Attorney General said, well, then we might lose campaign contribution limits for the entire United States. We shouldn't do that. Let's not do it. That's how that would work.
Correct. That's the ultimately the Attorney General gets to weigh all of the advice he gets, all of the recommendations, all the consultations, you know, and he can give weight to with whatever he feels is most appropriate, but it does stop with him. I'll just tell you that the advice and recommendations he gets are very well vetted, and the client is always consulted.
Thank you.
While we have you here, we're gonna take advantage of asking you more questions. I would like you to discuss more about the attorneys and you contracting for services, because that's something that, you know, previously has been discussed of cost-saving measures, expertise, things like that. And in order to save time during the budget conversation to talk about dollars and cents, I'd like you to talk about this overall concept and how that's worked to your advantage and how you're going to proceed in the future.
Okay, and Chair, just to clarify, you're kind of talking about that outside counsel, anywhere where we contract for outside assistance.
Right.
Okay. Yes, I'm happy to discuss that. So, you know, when we're looking at whether to use our in-house resources or to contract something out, there's a couple of factors we look at. One is, do we have the expertise in-house? So, for example, if we're dealing with a really complex financial situation, we always have bond counsel and we always have tax counsel, because we don't have for federal tax law, right? Because we don't have that expertise in-house, and we're not going to have someone who's doing that on a daily basis. And we want to make sure we get the best advice possible when we're dealing with our financial resources. So in areas like that, we always have standing contracts on those issues. In other areas, it's a capacity question. You know, do we have the resources available to fully litigate this case? And are we better situated, for example, because we have more experience in state court to do the state court actions? And is there a federal court case that would be better to send out? So it's always a balancing. I know last year, one of the things we discussed is we had to outsource, which we never do, our workers' compensation and some of our torts cases. And that was simply because those sections were less than half staffed, and we just didn't have the bodies. Now those contracts are coming to an end, and we're back to fully staffed in those sections, so we're not going to have to do that again. So at any given time, we definitely have a number of outside counsel contracts. Oil and gas is another area where, like Alaska Gasline Development Corporation, you know, when we're dealing with those really big, like, gas line development issues, we're going to have some outside counsel to help us with those complex matters. But so it's the complexity, the expertise, and then just what sort of resources we actually have available in-house to handle those.
So I know we're going to be going into the budget subcommittees shortly, but would you be able to provide us a list, a document of the billable hours and the number of attorneys per section that you've discussed? And we want to have an understanding of how those hours are being charged to other agencies.
I'm happy to provide that. So are you looking for number of positions and then the hours within that section?
Well, you have... you have, for instance, you know, the China cases and that that entire section, how you bill those, how the other departments, you know, get billed, any of the corporations. Just we'd like to have an understanding of how that works.
And also with these contracting services, I know that that may be an additional budget request, and so we'll get into it more there. But I'm trying to go for that big picture understanding and also looking at where's our resources going for each of these division, are they divisions?
We call them sections.
Sections, okay. Sections, yeah. Of legal services.
Okay.
That would be.
I think that makes sense. I can definitely give kind of the big picture, and then how those, which ones are contract, and we'll go in. I will go into that more on Friday. Kind of the big picture of which ones are billed out versus which ones are paid for with our general fund, so that the budget subcommittee knows kind of when you affect our budget, here's what you're affecting versus when you affect environmental's budget, the Department of Environmental Conservation, this is what you're affecting. Because that when it comes to like any of our transportation work, all of our Department of Environmental Conservation work, that's all billed to those agencies. So it's built in their budget instead of our budget. So I'll give kind of that overview on Friday.
That and also how many attorneys you have in each, because it, if we were to just look at these slides, it would be like, wow, these few people do a lot, but they are representing a whole team of attorneys.
Yes.
And I'd like to know how many are represented under each section.
Yes, no, I'm happy to do that. And I can also provide, you know, the paralegal support and that sort of thing if you want that detail as well.
Wonderful.
Chair Allard, do you have a question?
I was trying to be quiet through the chair. Do you guys have an organizational chart breakdown? Is that?
So I don't have every attorney because there's 148 of them and we have 274 total employees within the civil division, but I do have a breakdown. Why don't you see my presentation on Friday and then ask
me? Can I just do a quick follow-up now?
Yeah.
Because I would think that maybe you just say 134 attorneys in this one. Okay.
Yeah.
So I can
put the numbers in each.
Sounds good.
Section, and that way you can kind of see how it's broken down.
Representative Gray.
Through the chair, in this same vein, you talked earlier about having a lot of vacancies and now doing much better in terms of staffing. Can you speak a little bit about what you think helped change the tide there?
So Representative Gray, through the chair, I have to tell you what stopped the bleeding was HB 226, which gave us the 20% raise. That stopped people leaving our division. And I think the criminal division has actually would give you a similar kind of story. I think they are still struggling, and they'll talk about that a little bit on Friday. But even they are seeing, they may not be filled until people graduate, but they're seeing an uptick. So it definitely made a difference for us.
Anyone else? As you can see, we are eager for information, and I appreciate you being able to answer our questions and be prepared for getting into the budget. I imagine that we're going to have a lot of questions, not just in consideration of this current year's considerations, but also in how we can affect the whole. And so we look forward to an overview of the impacts of that increase and what you're doing. So I imagine that's a part of that conversation. So thank you for answering our questions and coming before us today. You may note that we have had some changes to this committee room, and I would like to highlight that we have made some adjustments. I want to say thank you to our wonderful maintenance and IT staff, but we have increased the capacity for the public once again to join us. And so I extend an invitation to the public to come and join us in our committee hearings and online. But we have ample room of seating space to make everyone comfortable. And we invite you to join us here at the Capitol if you can, to come and testify or just learn about the entire justice system as we are today. So that concludes our business for today. House Judiciary Committee will meet again on Friday the 9th to get the first hearing on HJR 3, concealed handgun reciprocity between the states by Representative Rauscher. We will also be having public testimony. Seeing there is no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect. It is 2:18 p.m.